Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Yes, it is that fantastic time once again. The Sixers Talk Podcast is in your ear. Welcome. Good to be with you once again. We are brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. It is the Kevin Rice from Temple University with me. As always, my esteemed co-host Ben Berry, our producer extraordinaire, is waiting in the wings on this podcast. So just me and Kevin chopping it up. And the streak is over, Kevin. The three-game losing skid. From 7-1 to 7-4, that is over. They've now won their eighth game of the season despite these COVID issues. Nearly 14 players were missing last night from the Sixers and Heat game because of protocols and precautions. Hell of a game, Kevin. Mm-hmm. I mean, edge of your seat type of stuff, overtime and all that. A general impression of the streak being over and how you feel about how they performed last night and what was really just a seesaw back and forth.
It was another signature game for Joel Embiid. I'll say
he was clutch, baby.
He was clutch. He was hitting more difficult shots and scoring better than I've seen him score in a while. It's like up there again. It was against the Heat, like B team. Like it was, he should have been doing this to the Heat, but he did do it to the Heat. So it was really fun.
And he wasn't doing it as much in the first half as he should have.
No, and there was adjustments Doc made that I'll get into later. But I've never seen Joel quite that locked in a little while, except for maybe the Hawks game last year. But
yeah, he had the meme mug going. It was like, whoa, like what's wrong with him?
It was like every shot. He was dribbling into triple teams and rising up and hitting over people. Like it was just an unreal zone he was in. Another Wells Fargo winning streak has begun now since they – snapped theirs against the Nuggets. So that's something to look forward to. We can now track to see if we won't lose another home game until 2023.
But, well, Joel was egging on the crowd that wasn't there as well. Like,
he's so fun. When Joel Embiid's having fun, it's tough for opposing teams. And as good as Joel was, Ben Simmons had a really, really, really rough game against. Yeah, I hope he's hurt, but I almost hope that knee was still bugging him a little bit because he did not.
For a reason, for something to explain why he played like that, where he only took two shots.
One of them put back and he flexed after. And I was like, Ben, you got to get yourself going, I guess. But you've been doing nothing on offense.
Oh, the dunk you mean? Yes.
Yes. Yeah. He was like, it was the third quarter, third or fourth quarter.
Well, did he even attempt a shot in the first half?
I don't think so. I might be wrong on that. But I thought the dunk was his first field goal attempt.
But, I mean, I think that's the yin and the yang of this game, right? Like, Joel's prowess and determination and willingness to, like, get to the finish line with a victory and Ben kind of slinking when we needed both of them. That was the game where, you know, they needed to end the losing streak. They needed to show some type of umph against the team that they should beat, who was – the shoe was on the other foot. The other team was depleted where the Sixers weren't. Mm-hmm. But I think they do miss Seth Curry a lot for what he brings to the team. But, man, for Ben to shrink like that was almost as big a storyline as Joel's, you know, 20-point third quarter, perfect third quarter. I think it was 8 for 8 in that quarter. Mm-hmm. So, and he was perfect from the line, so that was a perfect quarter. So, perfect from the line for the entire game. So, I think that, you know, obviously the Joel thing was just so much fun to watch. And even some of those jumpers where – you're like, man, like I think you can still get to the basket, but he likes to show off those guard skills so much, man, bringing the ball up. It's so – bro, after the game, Amy Fadul asks him about bringing it up and running the point. He's like, oh, yeah, I always had that in me, blah, blah, blah. Like, Joel, cut it out, bro.
He's been saying that for a few years now.
Right? Like, I know.
He's like, I want to be a point guard. And he was legitimately running point guard against the Heat.
Yes.
Bro, like demanding like, ball, bring it up.
Oh my God. So and at one point he was like passing it and then going to get it back. Like he's running the whole offense.
All right, reset.
Right. Oh man.
So, one thing Doc Rivers did was we've seen Joel operate out of the post a lot, and he's handled double teams a lot better out of the post this year. But when you're in the post, you still only have like 2 to 3 lanes to pass or see the court. And Doc Rivers said post game he wanted to move Joel into the middle of the court so he can see the rest of the court. And that was really evident in the second half when he started to get it going. There were so many instances. He had a couple assists and so many buckets just from him standing free throw line extended and just seeing the entire floor, drawing people in, knowing where he can go with his incredible 7-foot body movement. So this was a game that you can take a lot more away from, I think, than the Nuggets of the Hawks game when they're completely depleted. But
there's something from the Hawks game that lingers though. And he only played 4 minutes of that second half and then Doc pulled him and the team got blown out. And they weren't looking good at that point coming out of the locker room. But, you know, how that second half against the Hawks went and how the first half against the game last night went, I just feel like with the game against the Heat, I was looking to see if there was, like, some carryover, like some lingering effects of, like, the poor play and them getting blown out or what have you. Because it was a back-to-back, and in their previous back-to-back, he did look sluggish and looked very conservative on the defensive end. So I saw like, you know, maybe some of those things, and maybe that's why you saw him, you know, with that determined stoic look after a while, because he had to ratchet it up another level and get focused in to try to overcome maybe some of the fatigue or what have you from playing the back to back. But what's Ben's excuse though?
I hope the knee. I hope, cause there were two plays in particular last night. He fouled out in the fourth, had 2 or 3 offensive fouls that were just bad. But there were two plays, one where he, I think it was like 9 minutes left into the first or second quarter, he drove with Kelly Olynyk sagging totally off him. Like Kelly Olynyk was so far down. And he drove and just picked up his dribble at the foul line with no one within 4 feet of him and just never looked at the basket. He picked it up and then just looked for a pass. And it was like, Ben, like that, hurt or not, that is not doing anything good for the Sixers. That is kind of a microcosm of his struggles in the half court. And then there's another one where he ended up turning it over. He had the ball on the wing with absolutely no one around him against the Heat B and C team. And he did not even look for the 3-point shot. Like, if you're going to shoot a three, this is the game to do it. You're not on national television. It got flexed off. So just take that shot if it's there. And he dribbled into the teeth of defense, ended up turning it over, and it was rough for him. It was, I hope, the Rockets.
When his warts are showing, man, they're very glaring. You know, you mentioned those charges. It was a couple of those like nonsensical plays where it's like, well, Ben, why didn't you, like you mentioned, like, hey, sagging off, like shoot the jumper, or, you know, the things that he does which kind of annoy you sometimes, like the jump passes, like all of a sudden that's exacerbated and he's doing that like way too much. It just, he was out of rhythm, it seems like. He just wasn't like all the way connected. You know, maybe he didn't feel up for the game after missing the last one and then playing the Heat without all their stars. Maybe he took them lightly or what have you, but he just looked out of sync and like not confused, but just out of sorts, man. He just wasn't himself, wasn't the high basketball IQ guy. You saw the pace and the speed and the athleticism, but it just wasn't in the right package.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I hope it's the knee, but maybe it was also a player who knew he was getting traded soon. Wink. I don't have any sources on that. Don't. Fine.
No, you're fine. We will get into that for sure, because there's a lot going on with Ben, and we got to talk about what happened with this quarantine thing, and we'll get to that on the other side.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Yeah, Ben Simmons has some explaining to do in some aspects, and we as fans are just trying to piece some of the pieces together, and we'll get to Ben and what happened in Brooklyn after we talk some Danny Green, because, you know, what a contrast. I mean, I think is the first thing. If you go 0-for-9 from the floor, 0-for-7 from three in a game where the team needed you against the Atlanta Hawks, and then you bounce back the next night and almost break the Sixers record for threes, that's about as a stark contrast as you can get. And, of course, getting heckled by some random Brooklyn fan on his way out of the arena. What's your comfort level with Danny Green? Obviously he's better with Seth Curry out there because it's not just him and we're not as focused. He's not taking 25 three-pointers or 25 shots from the floor, like he did last night. But, you know, 21 threes is also like, yikes. If Seth Curry's out there, yeah, he hit nine of them, but if Seth Curry's out there, you probably get a little more balance there. But he was cooking, and the Sixers needed him, and I swore he was going to break that record and get that 10-3, and he even swore, because there was a few times he put a few threes up, and he didn't quite do the LeBron, Steph Curry turn around, look at the players on the bench, but he thought it was money, and they were just not falling there for him to break the record. But what a contrast, Kev. I mean, he was, man, I'm sure he felt bad after that 0-for-9, 0-for-7 from three game, and then to come back and then respond the way he did. As a pro's pro in a lot of aspects.
He's got three rings, Danny. And comfort-wise.
And a college one. And one in college.
And a college one. And he's going for a three-peat this year. So comfort-wise, I'm totally fine with Danny Green. He had a really rough game. He had a really rough series when he was on the Lakers in the finals. But this is a guy who was obviously uncomfortable with the role he was in as point guard Danny Green. Giving a guy like Danny Green, Danny Green's a very solid role player, but he's by no means going to create offense for you. And putting him in a situation where he had to create against the Hawks was unfair to him, but also just like, it's just not his game.
Just get it into the front court, you know? Yeah.
It's like asking Ben to just be a spot up shooter. Like, you just don't do that. So it was something where he then in the Heat game was more, or went back to his role that he knows and knows how to do. He knows where to be on the floor. He can be around Joel. So it was just what I saw, a rough shooting night combined with him playing out of his comfort, way out of his comfort zone. And then the Heat game, he had a good shooting, great shooting night, and was much more in rhythm of where he needed to be because of how he was playing and why he was playing around Joel. So I'm very comfortable.
I think his position, when I see the starting five on the floor, I see that as a glaring space where we could upgrade. And by saying we, I mean the team. I'm not on the team, but it's just a space where I feel like they could do better. But I'm comfortable now with him in that role. I see him as bringing a lot of veteran savvy, and I'm great with that. I just sometimes think he shoots too much, but it's just, you know, a shooter shoot. So I guess I just have to come to grips with that. And past, you know, Sixers teams, there's guys like Hollis Thompson and, you know, Isaiah Cannon or whoever is shooting all those threes.
Don't slander either of those two there.
Well, shit. I'm just saying, like, they're not Danny Green, three-time champion Danny Green, as you mentioned. So I'm just saying that I need to become more comfortable with the amount of threes, because that's just something like shooting a lot of threes, which is like rampant throughout the league. The Sixers hadn't been like a prolific, you know, big time 3-point shooting team over these past few years. But then, you know, they obviously they need to do some catching up and morph into a better shooting team. And Danny Green is a part of that. So I think the way he bounced back, particularly on a back to back, is super just heady for me, like to forget and move on and to show up when your team needs you. And he had 10 rebounds and 29 points. Like, you needed that from someone, especially when Ben wasn't going to give it to you and you needed, you know, another someone to match Joel, you know, in the scoring department. So I'm happy with the fact that he came out and showed up like he did. I wanted to be more consistent, but I say this more than anyone, I think, on Twitter and to my kids and friends, but survive and advance. So, like, they won. It was overtime. Danny Green did what he did, whatever. They won. They broke the streak, and they moved on. And I'm happy that it all came in a victory.
I'm totally fine this game, him shooting 21 threes, just because even statistically, he shot 21 threes. He made 9. That's 42%. So, like,
he's yeah. So, you take that every night. You take that every night, twice.
On Sunday. And right. Again, he's still a little bit overextended with no Seth Curry, no Tobias Harris, no general roster. So, on a normal night, he's not shooting 21 threes ever again. But I'm totally fine with him shooting that, because the Sixers clearly needed that in this game to just chuck threes from some of the chuck threes, with Danny Green being really – well, Mike Scott had a great game too, but really one of the only two or three players in the team who can comfortably shoot a three. So I was totally fine with it.
Mike played well. The percentages were not in his favor as far as him, you know, from the floor, 6 of 16 overall, 4 for 12 from three. But I think Maxey is the guy who – I know we were talking about Ben Simmons in a second, but Maxey, I think it actually, this relates to Ben. If you can give this kid, I mean, the whole idea against the Hawks was to kind of relieve some of the pressure of Maxey having to handle it the whole time and be the only guy bringing it up and whatnot. And the Hawks, you know, definitely preyed on that at certain points, trapping in the backcourt and pressing them and things like that. But Maxey, what he brings to the team makes Ben expendable in a certain aspect, because the pace and the flow is on point when Maxey's out there, and he can take the ball from the backcourt to the rim like Shake Milton or some of, you know, these other more prolific guards can do, and you feel okay with that. Like, the kid looks like the ball's on a string. I don't feel like he's going to turn it over. I feel like he's savvy and going to make the right decision. So his flow and rhythm makes Ben less, you know, he doesn't have to handle the ball, can play the four or, you know, whatever. You know, maybe you're just appeasing Ben and letting them bring the ball up when Maxey's out there and having Maxey play off the ball, because Maxey can do almost all the things Ben can do. So I think that plays into Ben needing to step his game up and be more reliable.
I'll say it a million times. Maxey is just incredible. He's so good.
How did he slip to us, Kevin?
I don't know. You remember, I was – oh my god, he's so awesome. But like, it's triple team Joel a lot last game. Like, they triple teamed him. They collapsed on him in every way in the first half, which is part of the reason why Doc moved him to the middle of the floor. But when they were triple teaming him, if any team triple teams Joel, you need a half court creator, you need a half court engine to kind of play off of him. And
that, you think that's Maxey.
And that's, I'm going to say, clearly more Maxey than Simmons at this point. Simmons' two biggest struggles in the league have been his shooting and his half-court creation. And like you said, the flow, just the optics, the aesthetic of Maxey in the half-court with Joel on the floor was just so much smoother. Like, it was – I didn't have any worries. It was like, oh, no, he's going to pass, and then something bad's going to happen. I was like, all right, Maxey has the ball, and three people are on Joel. Max is going to make something happen for himself or for someone else. And even if the shot doesn't go in from someone else or even from him, it was just so much more comfortable than Ben out there trying to create when teams are collapsing on Joel. So,
yeah, I think, it makes a glaring weakness with Ben's reluctance to shoot. The pick and roll just doesn't have as much bite. And when I look at Maxey, it's hard to believe he's his size and is doing the things that he does, because
and age, you know,
and age, absolutely.
Barely
20 years old and just super heady, 7 of 18 from the floor, 16 points. I'd like to see him shoot it better from three, but the potential and the ceiling is just like, man, only thing I worry about is if the dreads get too long, like, is he going to cut them or keep them short? Like, that's the only thing I'm worried about.
Gotta wonder. I can't pull Matisse and change his hair and then lose all of his powers.
Right. All month long, NBC Sports Philadelphia presents Headstrong, Men's Health and Sports. Headstrong, a series about men's health told through powerful stories involving the athletes we love. Learn more on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com/Headstrong. There was a report from Vincent Goodwill of Yahoo that we can backtrack to the Brooklyn Nets game when the Sixers' whole COVID issues began. Seth Curry gets a positive report of a positive test. He was on the bench in the first quarter. He's pulled from the game in the first half. He wasn't playing. You guys know all the story. He's sitting on the bench. He's sitting next to Sam Cassell. Joel Embiid comes down, sits next to him. The positive test gets found out. He's removed. The Sixers have to quarantine in New York overnight. But according to Vincent Goodwill, that wasn't sitting well with Ben Simmons, and he quite possibly got a car from Brooklyn back to Philly. Why he did that, we don't know. But how that relates to the team is that when Ben sat out of the Nuggets game, that was supposedly a punishment for him doing that, where the Sixers listed it as an injury at the ultimate last minute, and they got fined $25,000 for that. So it just leads to this combo. Like, we're already dealing with all the issues here in the early going of just trying to survive outside of the bubble. And then we get like these reports of entitlement and things like that. I don't know why Ben would have to come back to Philly, and I don't want to judge him for that, but forever the reason it wasn't approved by the team. And obviously you're supposed to quarantine, you got to quarantine. Like, you're not supposed to be like jumping in a car with somebody and, yeah, oh, I'm good. And, you know, flying back to, I mean, zooting back to Philly. But did this call catch you off guard, Kev? Were you upset? Did it bug you? What's going on?
I don't know. It was odd. I thought when everything first happened, when they were doing the quarantine and then Ben had his injury, I was like, okay, Ben's just taking a dive so the Sixers don't have to play this game. Like, that's good on him. And then they ended up playing the game anyway against the Nuggets. But at first I thought it was that. And then I assumed, and it was the knee thing, and I'm like, okay, maybe it was just a scheduled knee checkup. That's fine, whatever. Okay, I hope he's not hurt. And then it was it's been a lot of different they said kind of deals. So I don't really know what to believe. I also thought there's a possibility he was sitting out because of a possible trade, which is a common practice in the NBA. You sit a guy so he doesn't get hurt, so he can get traded. Obviously, that hasn't come to fruition yet because he's playing another game. But there was a lot going on. I don't think he should have left Brooklyn. I mean, players can do whatever they want, obviously. Like, they can go anywhere. But if you're ordered to quarantine, then that's a different story of you should probably just stay in Brooklyn with your team, you know, just where you're safe, where you're not going to spread the virus to anyone else or possibly catch it on the way back to Philly. So that was a weird, weird move by Ben just overall, just the entire situation. And that might be another explanation of why he kind of looked lost out on the court. There's a lot going on with him.
What is going on though? Because, like, not only did he cost the team, well, maybe not cost them a game, but they needed him against Denver. Mm-hmm. And then he's out for treatment, you know, for the next game. Like, what, like, not only did you cost them maybe some wins or some, you know, competitiveness or some camaraderie or the team, whatever, like, you also cost them $25,000 just because you didn't want to stay. That was a $25,000 car ride from Brooklyn to Philly. You know what I'm saying? Like,
the Nuggets game, I still like to believe he just sat, him and Joel sat out just so the Sixers could have not played that game, because they shouldn't have played that game. They shouldn't have played the game against the Heat either, or the Hawks probably. But I like where I'm landing on is that there's a lot going on off the court that I think we'll never know about, of just so many behind the scenes things of trade talk, injury, COVID, personal lives are still a thing. Obviously, these players, these people are human. They're playing on national television every night in front of all of us, but they're human.
I think we will find out eventually. I think just like Jimmy Butler, just like JJ Redick, eventually
down the road.
Yeah, down the road, some of those things will come out. I am very much, you know, I'm surprised that Ben put them in that situation, but I think he is starting to, I don't know. I mean, at certain points, you kind of like fall into what the expectations are. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy that mm-hmm. like, so the trade talk is out there. You know, people are mentioning his name and rumored moves and deals. And then maybe it affects you, you know, consistently hearing it all the time. Like, I don't know.
It certainly does. That's why so many athletes stay off Twitter or delete Twitter, just because they like, if I was if I was on Twitter every day and was like, oh, Kevin Rice is getting kicked off Sixers talk soon for someone else, I'd be like, well, I don't want
to. Right, yeah.
What?
We'll get to that. Yeah.
These people are human. I'm landing on that there's just a lot going on that I think is clearly affecting Ben on the court too. Again, like he looked lost. He looked uncomfortable. I'm going to land on that this is all connected, Ben. Hopefully he can get past it or everyone can figure something out for him. But
we need a Wobbstigate investigation. What did Isaac say? Yeah. Wobbstigation.
Yeah.
It
must suck to be famous, man. I never want to be famous.
What do you mean? That mustache is really famous.
I know. But like,
That should be the header on your Twitter
page. I trimmed it a little bit.
You have a lot. Yeah. More
curls. So. Getting out of hand. So I had to reset.
I thought you were going for Raleigh fingers vibe. You wanted to start twisting it at the edges.
Okay. It's got to reset. It was unmanageable and I hadn't done it in a while. So I got to square two again.
Hashtag this Kevin mustache talk. Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition makes WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu. Hot and juicy. The rumor mill is spinning, and the latest is not involving James Harden and his kind of round dad bod that he's rocking these days, but it is involving the almighty 60-point scorer Bradley Beal and the speculation that the Sixers might free Brad and bring him to Philly in exchange for Ben Simmons. Kevin, does that sit well with you? Do you feel like Bradley Beal is the guy you want to see on the Sixers team for Ben Simmons?
Bradley's way up there. I'd still rather have Harden, but
why? Why? He's younger.
Harden's a better player.
Okay.
Elevates the team. Bradley Beal is. I'm not dissing Bradley Beal at all. He's really, really good.
It will be hard to diss Bradley Beal. So I know you're not dissing Bradley
Beal. I'm going to do it right. I'm just kidding. People get hung up on the Harden thing I hear a lot, he's a dribbler, he doesn't play any defense, he doesn't pass. That kind of describes Bradley Beal. So Harden is a prolific passer. People don't give him enough credit. He's averaging over 10, almost 11 assists this year already. Bradley is an incredibly gifted scorer. Like we saw it, obviously ridiculous, but he has issues on the offensive end of forcing shots. He does not play good team defense, on ball defense. So, and again, it's sounding like I'm talking down on him. He's an incredible player. I'd trade Ben for him right away, I think. But I'd rather still have the Houston Rockets point guard. But I also need Ish Smith to come back in the Bradley Beal trade. That's my only stipulation. I need
oh
Ish Smith
back God.
In form. Tyrese Maxey needs a vet. Joel Embiid needs a third string point guard.
I don't think they would really debate that with you if you wanted Ish Smith back in the Bradley Beal trade. I think the thing for me, though, is like,
yeah, talk now. You love Brad, so talk him up because I just kind of.
We all saw the 60-point performance. Mm-hmm. We all saw his progression and growth and what he's become. I think the thing for me is like Harden in his disgruntled situation and his age. Like he needs the Sixers more than we need him. I would say at this point. Because the Sixers have other options. They can get other players like Bradley Beal or Zach LaVine or Buddy Hield. Like there are other options besides Harden. So he needs a team that can help him win a championship and give him a safe landing spot after this debacle in Houston. Bradley Beal, though, likes being in Washington. He likes, he makes buku bucks. So that would be the biggest thing that would be like, whoa, like, you got to make the money match up because Ben doesn't make as much as Brad. Yeah, but
that hurts my Ish Smith trade idea.
Yeah, definitely. But because Sixers would be shoving more assets in to make it match up. Mm-hmm. But I just think when I look at Beal, and the thing that made last night's game so exciting is the fact that Joel rose to the occasion. He had a so-so first half, an amazing third quarter. But just the third quarter precipitated the fourth quarter in overtime. Like, it just continued to be like, man, Joe was out there giving it to him, like giving it his all.
Yeah.
So he hit shots and made plays that aren't always like, he's not always hitting those shots, not always in his wheelhouse. And like you said, some of those times he came down and pulled up with like two hands in his face, or
in the end, once he was drawing, was just like none of them should have gone in. Like, yeah, none.
Right. So I just feel like the Sixers still have an issue of who's the man in crunch time. And like you said, they're forcing the ball out of Joel's hands. And they've added shooters to the team. But if you have a guy who, like, if you got Joel and Brad, you can't double either of them. You know what I'm saying? You got to play everybody straight up, because once you double Brad, then Joel's one-on-one. Once you double Joe, Brad's one-on-one. So I think it would solve the Sixers' issue of having a crunch time shot creator, shot maker, and just someone, you know, that if we're ever in this situation, when it comes down, like here in the first through third quarters, you know, we're playing our behinds out. If it comes down to the fourth quarter, we have two guys we can go to at this time who can get their own shots or draw a foul.
I think it's the same thing with Harden. Not to harp on Harden too much, but either of these guys, I would take
like jump off a roof just because they've got James Harden instead of Bradley Beal.
Yeah. But if they do get Beal, obviously a great move. If they do get Beal and then the Nets or another team end up getting Harden for a lesser package, then I'm going to be a little upset just because.
Well, yeah, if he comes to the East on another, the Heat or, they add James Harden, the Sixers add Bradley Beal, but trade Ben Simmons, and that's going to be tough.
It's rough. So I am still Team Harden, even for me, is a boulder because he's incredible. But again, Bradley Beal would take instantly. That list you said of Harden, LaVine, Hield, and Beal, I would go Harden way up top, Beal, bigger drop-off, LaVine, bigger drop-off, Hield, of order of importance, order of how much they can raise the ceiling of the Sixers, how much I want them on the Sixers.
Yeah. Or how much the Sixers have to give up. Because I do believe there's a world where they can keep Ben and Joel and maybe trade for one of those lesser names, to kind of form a big three. But I think what this team needs, you know, if you got a guy like Maxey who can play on or off the ball, and he's a rookie, so I'm not expecting a whole lot from him, and I don't expect him to be like this, you know, bigger contributor to the squad all of a sudden if Ben leaves. Like, I don't want to put that type of pressure on him. I want whoever to come in to take it's that all, type that, take gravy, that pressure.
Whatever Maxey does, it's all gravy.
I hope so, but I'm just saying, if you lose Ben all of and pick up LaVine, for instance, or Buddy Hield, they're not really bringing the ball up like that. They're not initiating offense. So all of a sudden that will fall on Shake or Maxey or, you know, someone else. But I just think that if the Sixers are going to take the next step forward, they need to continue to score. And they did all – they scored 137 points last night with Ben Simmons scoring five. Like, and he's the one of the most highest paid players on the team, all-star, all those things. Like, it can't be like that, you know? So, you know, you have a guy like Brad or James on the team, all of a sudden they gave you 25 and you won by – you know, that was an easier game than it was last night, you know?
People get hung up on Ben's defense versus someone else's offense. Offense is just way more important in the league. You take the best offensive player over the best defensive player every day of the week. So while Ben is an absolutely incredible on-ball defender, I would rather have a guy who can comfortably get a shot rather than comfortably defend a shot, because statistically – if you're going to defend, like, Ben doesn't –
good offense beats better defense.
Yeah, like, good defense. Ben's always been great on Tatum. Tatum always has really rough games when Ben guards him. And percentage-wise, it drops, like, 30%-ish probably. His field goal percentage around that, probably maximum. But on the offensive end, he does nothing to kind of take advantage of that or amplify that. So defense is really fun. It's so cool to watch a guy just get absolutely strapped up by Ben Simmons, but offense is also just way more important than an elite offensive player is way more important than an elite defensive player. Jeez, easy for me to say.
Yeah, but you know, I look, you know, I see the whole thing with the taking the car back and all that, and you know, some of his, you know, the body language and how he approaches the media and whatnot. So I always wonder, you know, if he feels comfortable in his own skin, or if he's, you know, still going through these growing pains and whatnot, because so much is being asked of him, and mm-hmm. so much of him to kind of develop and be more than what he is right now. So I don't know, man. I just hate to see that entitlement from him, you know, disassociated with the team or whatever happened there in Brooklyn. And then you have games like last night, and like, what's going on? So that was probably the worst game I've ever seen them play, you know, last night.
That was probably the roughest game I've seen him play, just in terms of like getting just exhausted by watching him play and knowing nothing was gonna happen.
Right. Like, you knew nothing else. There was no extra gear or any, all right, Ben's going to start, you know, hitting his outside shots or getting to the line and trying to develop a rhythm. Like, you knew none of that was coming.
He had 12 assists, which is great, great. But it was never like he's going to make something happen. And it's like, oh, he missed, but he made something happen. It was just, he was just there. It was just on the court. And Joel legitimately just carried that team to a victory. Like, that was what superstar players do, of just putting a team on your back, single-handedly winning on both ends of the court.
Now, you said Joel doing that. I think you could see Brad or James doing that. I just could never see Ben putting the team on your back.
Yeah. I think rookie year, his sophomore year maybe, but it's gotten to the point where teams know how to play him on offense, and he's stagnant. He just doesn't know how to.
Yeah, he would need some help to pull that off, right?
Yeah, and he's a 24-year-old human being. A lot going on. I'm not going to diss him for being lost or looking confused. That's all. I hope that'll get sorted out.
Part of the growing pains, right.
But there comes a point where there needs to be maybe a change of scenery, maybe because Doc Rivers was supposed to be this guy who was going to sit Ben down and be like, look, this is what you need to do. Like, Ben was like, I want Doc to get into me. I want Doc to point out my flaws. And Doc did that for a little bit, still said he didn't care about the shot, which is concerning. But I've growing tired of watching Ben on the Sixers.
Yeah. It's tough, particularly on games like last night, where all of his weaknesses are just so glaring.
Against a bad Heat team, like depleted scrub Heat team.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Here we are, less than 15 games in the season of the 72-game slate, and hey, they say men lie, women lie, but numbers don't, Kevin. And the numbers from our friends at PointsBet tell us that Joel Embiid has the fourth best chance to win Defensive Player of the Year at plus 800, Ben Simmons at plus 1600 further down the list. I would say this is a good time to talk about Joel Embiid and his Defensive Player of the Year prowess, particularly after an MVP-type performance where he had 45 and 16 rebounds against the Miami Heat, a depleted Miami Heat team. But Defensive Player of the Year for Joel Embiid, something he's mentioned and wanted for a while now. It's tough because I think that the voters don't see him and Rudy Gobert as like the same – and this, when it comes to defense, is in the same stratosphere. So I would think it's a lot easier for guys like him to continue to be in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation than Joel to like break into the Defensive Player of the Year conversation, or even to break into that to win it, because you got like people are always going to lean towards Gobert, I think, because he's already won a couple, and because, you know, he is what he is. He's more of a defensive player than an offensive player.
Gobert definitely hangs his hat on defense more than
Joel. So I just feel like his name just by default is going to be in the conversation, where Joel has to kind of continue to work hard to break into that, to be mentioned there. And, you know, guys like Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo, I think, are going to get a little more attention that way than Joel, who is more of an offensive wunderkind. I mean, he's great defensively. We all know that. But I just feel like when people think about defense, those guys, Giannis, might come to mind more than Joel. But I think he can win Defensive Player of the Year. I think he just needs to have more consistent production and continue to, you know, show out on those games where it's, you know, like him not playing against Jokic doesn't help him in the Defensive Player of the Year you know, debate, because you don't see him matched up against these other prolific guys as much as you would like Bam not playing last night or possibly not playing in this next game either, you know? So, Ben at plus 1600, I think Ben before the season will have more of a chance, but what about you?
The award typically goes to big men just because they defend the paint most, except for Giannis last year, which was a questionable decision. But the award goes to big men because the layup is the most efficient shot in the NBA. You guard the goal, you do all that. So Anthony Davis, Rudy Gobert, Joel Embiid, all those types of guys, Draymond, all those guys defend the rim the most. So they're always going to be in the conversation. And like you said, Joel's kind of been around that conversation, but hasn't really fully broke into it yet. This could probably be the year he at least breaks into it. The people ahead of him on points bet for odds are Giannis, Rudy Gobert, and Anthony Davis. And of those three players ahead of him, I'd say Joel Embiid is probably the second or third best two-way threat there. Defensively, I think he's better than Giannis, I'd say, right this season at least. Gobert is going to be up there every year. He exerts so much more energy on defense, so he's always kind of locked in on that end of the floor while he's just kind of catching lobs on the offensive end. And then AD always is up there. He's got a great team around him. He's that defensive anchor. So Joel does so many things. He had 5 steals against the Heat, too. 5 steals and a block. So he has those loud stats of you can see it in the box score, but he also just does so much. He communicates with everyone. He rotates so well to just deny. He, like, non-box score stuff. If he denies shots before they even go up, just with length, just with touch, or just everything. He's so, so good on that end. And there was a play against the Heat where Isaiah Joe got caught up on a screen, and Joel had to guard Kelly Olynyk and Precious Achiuwa in the lane by himself, and they were splitting him. And Duncan Robinson skipped past right to Precious, and Joel had to stop on a dime, recover, took one step, and rose up and blocked it late in the game. And that is just absolutely ridiculous play. Like, he's such a borderline genius on defense that even if he doesn't win, he's going to be up there this year, I think.
Yeah, I hope he's up there. I think it will represent, you know, a step forward for him. I know he has a gigantic chip on his shoulder from being snubbed from the all NBA teams and all NBA defensive teams. I just thought it was a great progression for Ben to be on the first team all defense and then to be in that Defensive Player of the Year conversation, because I see his commitment to the defense and I see Joel's commitment there as well, but he's also doing a whole bunch of other things for this team where Ben's lack of shooting is offset by his defensive prowess. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think the Sixers, like, I think that teams who win, unless it just is like, whoa, like, this dude is averaging 4 blocks a game and 2 steals and,
like, a Miles Turner, you know, kind of thing.
Unless it's just like the numbers and the play are just like blowing you away, I feel like it's more of a thing where, like, Joel isn't even going to be mentioned in those areas, because I don't think those things go to teams who aren't winning or doing really well. And the Sixers were a 6 seed. So, you know, the teams who win get the MVP, like the Bucks, and the Defensive Player of the Year, like the Bucks, and the Coach of the Year, and the Sixth Man. Like, those things go to, like, the teams who win. Like,
yeah, you elevate.
You have to win. You have to win more, I think, to be to win those awards. And the Sixers, are, you know, at least in the top 4 teams in the East, like, they're not even in the upper echelon of the East. They have something to prove in that regard. So I think when the team wins more of the personal individual accolades will come with it.
And that's hopefully something that's going to come again this year, of just to win a little bit more. And even if they don't win, I'm just taking a step back. Even if Joel doesn't win any awards, taking a step back here, I am never taking a Joel Embiid Sixers game for granted, because he is absolutely phenomenal. And I refuse to watch a game of his when he is wearing a Sixers uniform and let it go by without acknowledging how incredible he is.
Well, there you have it. Kevin Rice, you're incredible We appreciate what you bring to this podcast.
Ben Berry's incredible too. I'll give him a shout out for Danny Ripson.
No, I'm not going to rip Ben Berry. He probably isn't wearing a shirt, but that's his prerogative. But this has been the Sixers Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University. Wilmu works for the Kevin Rice from Temple University, for Ben Berry, CrossFitter extraordinaire. I'm Danny Pommels. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.